So before we get to the show, I need to let you know that we are coming to New York City. Oh boy. Me and Hans, that's who's coming, to do a live show. Because we are going to be a part of the Now Hear This podcast festival from September 8th through the 10th. It is a big event that brings your favorite podcast to one place, that's New York City, for a weekend of live shows, which is super awesome. We get to do a live show, but there's also going to be live shows by, oh, I don't know, people like Love It or Leave It, Politically Reactive with W. Kamau Bell, and The Mortified Podcast, which I will be hijacking to read excerpts of my diaries from age 8 through 18. Okay, in one weekend, more than 25 of your favorite podcasts are going to be doing live shows. One ticket gets you into everything, all under one roof. Use our offer code, which is terrible. The offer code is the word terrible. Our offer code is awesome, but the offer code itself is terrible. You type, that's what you type in, the word terrible, and you save $20. Where do you enter the offer code? On a website, which is nowhearthisfest.com. Go there. Enter offer code terrible at checkout and save $20. Nowhearthisfest.com. Okay, here's the show. Hello, it's Nora McInerney. I just said that like I was answering the phone. Hello, Nora McInerney speaking. This is terrible. Thanks for asking. Before I met my first husband, Aaron, I love saying my first husband, by the way, it just makes me seem like mysterious, I think. Like my first husband, and then people have to ask, and I have to say, he's dead. And whew, wow, I killed him. Just kidding, he had brain cancer. Or did he? Just kidding. He did. He for sure did. But before I met my first husband, who died, I was definitely a serial dater. I was never without a boyfriend. So dating a lot of people meant that I also had a lot of breakups. And I don't even know if that's by anyone else's standards, but by my standards, it felt like a lot of breakups. And the first one was a doozy. It was a big one because, you know, we had met in high school and we were at that point where we were nearing a decade of being together. And we're just sort of at that point where it's like, well, now what? All of a sudden, I was sort of in my late 20s, and I was dating a guy, and then we broke up because, like, I'm from the Midwest. TikTok, baby, you got to get married by 30. Insert eye roll here, but at the time, that felt like a very real and present deadline to me, and I knew that this guy should want to marry me. Like, he should be spending all of his time just conspiring to delight me with a shiny object and a monologue about how he could not imagine his life without me. And every day that he didn't do it, I just hated him. Even though, looking back, not compatible, did not truly want to marry him, but I wanted to be wanted. And then the third breakup, I honestly was not a big deal. I don't really know what I was thinking in that relationship. I do know we had been on a bike ride and I unlocked our bikes. Basically, it was like, this is what we should do. We should also part. And then I just biked away. I would seek no feedback about the relationship or my part in the breakup. I had about a 0% chance of self-reflection in any way and a 100% chance of creating my own story around this breakup. And all of these stories boiled down to one headline, which was basically, it was their fault. Obviously. Like, it had to be them. Like, you don't want to be with me? The problem is clearly you. However, in my heart and brain and soul, the headline was, Nora, you are so unlovable and unmarriable, and everything's your fault. And that's why you're going to be lonely forever. I wanted to know why I was alone, but also I didn't. You know, I didn't want to hear the truth. And that is why what I'm bringing to you in this episode is so fascinating to me. It's an episode of Leah Tau's podcast, Strangers. And when Leah found herself unceremoniously dumped back into the dating pool and found herself, you know, dating and going on dates, but not getting that locked down, not snagging a boyfriend, not getting married. Leah did something really badass and cool, and she contacted one of these guys who hadn't wanted to date her and asked him why.
You know, I've been single for almost 4 years since my ex and I split up, and I decided to figure out why the hell that is. Why am I not finding love again? So I've gone back to some of the people who didn't want to date me in recent years, and I've asked them this. If you feel ambushed by this question,
all right,
skip it.
Sure.
But why do you think you and I didn't connect? Like, I'm trying to understand, like, what goes wrong for me? The guy you can hear on the tape is Robert. I met him online last winter, and after our second date, he didn't want to go out with me again. I hadn't seen or talked to him since until I wrote and said, hey, I'm doing a story about dating. Could I interview you? And he said, sure. So you'll hear his answers today. But first, let me give you a bit of my backstory. If you listen to this program a lot, perhaps you know that I was engaged to be married, but we broke up when I was pregnant, and then we tried to get back together, and then we broke up for good when our son was 10 months. It'll be 4 years this fall, and it's the first time in my life that I've been single for a real stretch. And I always make sure people knew that, you know, that I was never single before, because I found it so embarrassing to be single. Especially with such a young child, you know, when all the other baby mamas were married. So I wanted people to know that, you know, I wasn't one of those sad cases who just could never get a man. Because a woman who can't get a man is about as low as you can go on the social totem pole. Not too long ago, a friend of mine who's a little older than me saw her husband of 30 years walk out on her. They'd been together since she was 16, and we'll call her Mary. And I was discussing their breakup with a mutual friend of Mary's and mine, who told me how surprised she was that Mary, who's an enormously accomplished, strong, intelligent woman of the 21st century, kept talking about the shame she felt that she couldn't, you know, hold on to her man, as she said, that she wasn't enough for him and all that. Is that still how women think? Our other friend said. Have you ever felt that way? At first, I protested, oh no, I'm so glad to be out of that relationship, and blah, blah, blah. But it sounded hollow because I had felt exactly that when I'd spent more than 3 years lying to myself and others about it. When my ex decided he didn't want me, it was the first time in my life that I lost control of the narrative. I went from being engaged to be married and pregnant and looking for houses every Sunday to being 8 months pregnant, alone in an apartment. Discarded and devastated. We use that word sort of willy-nilly, but I was truly devastated. But I decided to cover up the shame and humiliation I felt. Like if I could just pretend that it was okay, it would be. I moved to a new coast, started a new project, the one you're listening to at this very moment, and got busy making a home and making friends in a new city, being a mom and perfecting the facade of the kick-ass, can-do, never-say-die producer, mommy, superwoman who took her son to preschool on the back of her bike, mowed the lawn, assembled the grill, handled a drill, and produced her own podcast. I also made a big point of being friends with my ex. We'd moved to California separately, but together, and we lived a few doors down from each other and co-parented. And people were, oh, so impressed. You could teach classes in co-parenting, they'd say, when we were both at some literary party and would jokingly introduce each other as baby daddy and baby mama. My ego liked this very much. It was almost like my ego needed it to survive, because it was a way for me to take the story back. I couldn't control that he'd wanted other women and other things more than he'd wanted to marry me, but I could control the narrative of the aftermath. Oh, we're so much better off this way, I'd say. We were terrible as a couple, but we're great co-parents. He can be a really good friend. I'm getting the best of him. And there was truth in that. But it was also part of the cover-up. I put my feelings in a box, busy as I was trying to show the world and him how grand everything was. And it was a key part of my plan that I would soon meet someone else, perhaps even have another kid and create a new family in the image that I and most people in this culture see as the truest way to live, you know, two parents and at least two kids. So I signed up for online dating. The first couple of times I went on a date with someone that I thought was suitable, I came home drawing a huge sigh of relief because now I'd sorted that out. Whew, thank God. I hadn't even made out with these people. We're talking one date, but I was like, oh good, this will work. that's ridiculous, of course, but that's how it had always worked for me in the past. But this time, the suitable candidates didn't necessarily follow my plan. A couple of them just didn't contact me after the first or second date, and I was like, huh? I know that sounds arrogant, but I was totally new to dating at this older age where the fact of two people getting together and both liking each other and not having mental health issues or hang-ups or commitment phobia or baggage or an overly critical attitude or a shattered heart or something that gets in the way feels like an utter miracle. Over the past 3.5 years, I've dated a few guys for 4, 5, and 6 months. One lived far away, one struggled with severe depression, and one I had very little in common with except for great sex. He'd bore me to tears at dinner, but I still sometimes wondered if we couldn't make it work because I was so eager to be in a relationship again. Plus, you know, good sex can be pretty seductive. I never said it, but I hated being just me. What I said was, oh, it's so good for me to learn to be alone. And it was, but it was also really f***ing hard. Before my son's father, also known as my ex-fiancé, I'd had an unbroken string of monogamous relationships. A high school boyfriend for 3 years, a college boyfriend for 5 years, and a 10-year relationship immediately after that, before then spending 4 years with my son's father. And these previous relationships were good, easy, drama-free, for the most part. Getting together and getting along was simple, like, you like me, I like you, good, let's go. And with each of these guys, we quickly settled into a snuggly-wuggly symbiosis of mutual positive reinforcement. You're the greatest. No, you're the greatest. And I just loved that. It was like I could relax, breathe, face the world, because I always had someone on my team. As soon as I met my first boyfriend in high school, I was like, this is the greatest feeling ever. Not just being in love, but also being two. And for the next 3 years, he and I spent virtually every night in a tight snuggle, me, him, and his golden retriever in his tiny single boyhood bed. I know this sounds weird to Americans, but in Denmark, most people are allowed to stay at their boyfriend's house in high school. And for the next 24 years, I didn't spend many nights alone. I had to look at my single friends and think, how do you do it? The world is so cold and mean at times. If you can't escape into being a we, how do you manage to leave the fucking house? I felt sorry for them, but also that I was just not as strong as them. That I could never do that. Well, now I've had to. I've gone on a lot of dates with people who were interested in me that I was not interested in, and with people that I was interested in who weren't interested in me. But the alignment of interests has seemed totally elusive. At one point, I took a year off from dating to open up that box of feelings and process some of the grief and pain and anger over my last relationship. Then I went back to dating, feeling that now I'd done the work and therefore deserved a relationship. But no one had notified the universe that I was now ready and deserving, and no relationship came. So I decided to go talk to some of the people I've dated. And I'm also going to various experts, including Daniel Jones, who edits Modern Love in the New York Times, and a woman who runs a man trap program. And I'm thinking I'll put all this material into a series of 2 or 3 episodes over the next month. And they'll be different from what we typically do. You know, they won't be these epic life stories with a clear dramatic arc or a clear beginning, middle, end. Because who knows how this will end? It's a learning quest. Today I'm going to talk to the guy you heard at the very top. And look, I know that going back to him and other guys who've turned me down, asking them, why not me? Can seem so arrogant and whiny and self-involved and potentially aggressive, like how dare you not want to date me? But I hope it doesn't come off that way. I wanted to do it because many of us have been in that situation where someone doesn't ask us out again or writes to say, hey, thanks, but no thanks. And it leaves all sorts of room to stew on our own shortcomings, right? Maybe I'm too old. Maybe it's because I have a kid. Maybe I'm too much this or not enough that. So I thought it could be instructive for me, and hopefully for you, to hear what people actually say about why they didn't want to date me, and also what did work for them with the person they chose instead, and why online dating has worked so much better for them than it has for me. Maybe they have some tips. So I went to talk to Robert, whom I'd gone on 2 dates with, before he wrote and said, I think you're wonderful, but I've met someone else, which is the nicest way to be rejected. So I wasn't feeling as anxious about talking to him as I did with some of the other guys, but when the day came to go see him I was in a very heartbroken place over another guy, which is not the best state of mind when you're going to interview someone who rejected you. Would be easier to be like, hey, I'm seeing someone too. It's all working out for me, just so you know. But I learned some interesting things, and I got some good advice on my current romantic debacle. Here's Robert.
My ex and I split up over a year ago now, but things had been rocky for a while. She had sort of been pursuing other guys.
That'll usually do it.
That will do it, yes. So as soon as we split up, it had been long enough that I felt eager to sort of get out there, but I didn't want to be that guy who starts dating way too early. So I waited about 6 months. And then I think the day that it was 6 months after I made the decision, I was like, okay, I'm dating now. And it was kind of scary because I'd been with her since we were in our early to mid-20s. So now here I am last year in my early 40s thinking of dating. And again, with my ex having sort of pursued other people, my self-esteem was kind of like, you know, if I can't keep my wife, why is anybody going to want to date me or whatever? So I forced myself to just put myself out there. And then I started trying online dating. That worked great. I thought it would be, you know, women are in this sort of driver's seat. I'd have to email a bunch of people to hear back from them. But in less than an hour, women were asking me if I wanted to go for coffee or whatever. And it seemed, you know, there were all these interesting women, which was, by the way, great for my self-esteem because I was like, oh, these cool, beautiful women are eager to go out with me, you know? And so that was nice. But after about 3, 4, 5 dates, it would start to feel like it's getting serious. And I didn't feel like I was ready for anything like that at the time. I, you know, the third woman I dated after splitting with my wife, I'm probably not going to get into a deep, serious relationship with. So I dated quite a bit. And my girlfriend now I met through the site, and we've been dating for 7 months or something, and it's going really well. It went remarkably smoothly for me.
And how long were you online dating total?
3, 4 months, something like that.
If you feel ambushed by this question,
all right,
skip it.
Sure.
But why do you think you and I didn't connect? Like, I'm trying to understand, like, what goes wrong for me?
In my case, nothing went wrong. I thought you were awesome. Well, I think you're awesome. And I was attracted to you. And a couple times we went out, we had great conversation, I thought. It was just I had started dating the person that I'm currently dating now. And I met her first. And so things were starting to get serious with her. And I'm not somebody who wants to be casually dating a lot of people. Anytime anything goes beyond a nice kiss goodnight or whatever, then I'm like, I feel kind of sketchy doing that with more than one woman at a time. And so I think I just told you, you know, that I thought you were awesome and all that was true. That wasn't me being polite, but that I was serious about somebody else and I didn't want to date multiple people if I'm dating somebody seriously.
You know, it was a very nice email you sent me. I did not feel in any way mistreated by you.
That's good.
But at the same time, I was like, why does this keep happening to me? Is it just timing or is there also something... is there something that I'm projecting that's not making it happen? Like, I think after my ex and I split up, I was so wounded. There was a lot of betrayal involved.
Yeah.
And so part of me was like, maybe there's something fundamentally, like, broken about me that I used to just be, like, open and like, oh, good. Maybe I'm projecting this sort of anxious thing around it or seem desperate or... do you think?
I didn't feel that way at all with you. For me, it was just timing. If I hadn't been getting serious with somebody else, I would have totally wanted to keep dating you. And I don't know if this is saying too much on air or whatever, but after our second date, I kissed you goodnight, and that was incredibly nice and really enjoyed it. So on all different aspects in terms of intellectually and, you know, being attracted to you and things like that, those were all there for me. So I guess I'm not of much help in answering this, except it was timing.
Of course, you have to question how honest this guy is going to get with me, right? I mean, would he tell me if he found me unattractive or unappealing? Probably not. But in this case, I actually believed him, even when he first sent that email saying he was seeing somebody else. But still, of course, if you're me, you can't help thinking that if he'd been blown away by me, perhaps that other woman would have had less pull on him, that he still chose her. So I asked Robert what made it click with her. And he said the typical things, you know, they had a similar sense of humor, they liked the same things, found each other attractive. You know, the baseline things that kind of have to be in place for it to work. but I still wondered just how much was timing and how much was this woman being the one. So I asked Robert if he believed in soulmates.
There's a Tim Minchin song that's this unromantic song that's about how he doesn't believe in soulmates. And, you know, he's singing to his girlfriend or whatever, or his wife, I want to be with you, but if I weren't with you, I'd be with somebody else, you know? And I definitely feel that way. Like, I don't feel like I had to meet the exact right person. There were tons of really interesting people that I could see myself dating long term. You, for example, a couple other people. So for me, it's timing.
It's like you got to find a guy just in that window where he's like, has been divorced long enough. You know, like you said, you're not going to settle down with the third person you go on a date with after your divorce. Just long enough that he's kind of maybe ready, but before he gets like snatched up by someone else. It's like there's a window, a very small window of a couple of months.
For me, it was a few weeks. It was really like 3-week period of time. But there do seem to be many more sort of good catches who are women on the market than men. I think most of the women I've gone out with are better than me in terms of being more attractive, being cooler, being sort of more interesting. It seems like the pool of decent women, for whatever reason, seems to be larger or something than the pool of decent, dateable men. And maybe that's saying something about men versus women in general. I don't want to get into trouble with that one, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's true. You know, my friends are like, Leah, you're so great. Like, we want to set you up. We can seriously not think of a single person to set you up with because the only guys we know who are not married are like kind of players. We've set them up with people before it ended in disaster, you know?
That's true with all of my friends. All of my friends who are good guys in whatever way you want to define good are in long-term relationships, whether they're married or not. And the guys I know who are single are either incredibly boring, not somebody who one would want to date for whatever reason. But I do have these single friends who are amazing women, who are gorgeous and interesting, smart, educated, cool, warm, wonderful people. And occasionally one will joke, like, Robert, set me up with one of your friends. And I don't have a single friend who I would set a woman up with.
So an expert I talked to told me that in online dating, 28-year-old women have twice as many men following them, and 48-year-old men have twice as many women following them. So the impression both Robert and I have that there are more amazing women than men on the market in our age bracket is apparently a fact. It helps me feel a little less crazy and a little hopeless at the same time. Then Robert told me something interesting about how he and his girlfriend got together.
We took things very slowly. You know, there's this question on OkCupid that's like, how many dates will it take before you would consider really sleeping with somebody? And I think the common wisdom is the right answer is 3 to 5 dates or whatever. A lot of people answer that. And that's way too quick. And I'm somebody who enjoys that aspect of a relationship quite a bit. I'm a guy. But I realize that that's just way too quick because if you don't really know somebody after three dates, you know, if the first date's coffee, second date's a hike, the third date's maybe dinner, your first time having dinner together, and then you're going to sleep together. I don't know. It seems too quick to me.
How many dates did you and your girlfriend go on before you had sex? If that's not too intimate.
My current girlfriend? 6 weeks. I think we came up with a random number and joked, like, 22nd date. And I think it ended up being something like that.
22nd dates before you had sex?
Yeah, it was 6 weeks before anything happened that wasn't above the waist. I'll put it that way. We probably averaged 3 dates a week and 6 weeks. So, yeah, 15 to 20 dates. Yeah.
Wow. That's, like, pretty unheard of, I think, in the culture. Was it you, or was it her, or was it just like understood by both of you?
I think it was understood by both of us because I had slept with people earlier in dating. You know, there was a little bit of relatively recently divorced guy having fun dating, that sort of thing. But I realized, oh, that's too quick. And so we just took it as it went. It felt natural, you know, and, you know, we would kiss and things like that. So it was clear that, you know, we were physically attracted to each other and that was nice, but we waited until it seemed right to sleep together. And I think at one point I made moves in that direction before we had slept together. And this was a couple of weeks before we actually slept together. And she was just kind of like, not ready. And then I just laid back off and waited for it to happen naturally.
And how much do you think that had to do, not just with, of course, picking the right person, because I totally get the point about how it can cloud your judgment, and you can also, there's a false kind of intimacy there in a way. But how much do you think in the kind of classic, you know, men are like this and women are like that kind of dynamic, that it also maybe made you more serious about her, that she put that off? Like, did it make you want her more in a way, do you think?
No, I don't think so at all. I feel weird saying this, but having, you know, a fairly high sex drive or whatever, that's something that's an important part of a relationship to me, but I never felt like she was putting me off or uninterested. She just needed to give it some time, and I'm not such a guy that I can't wait a couple weeks. But had we slept together earlier, I think the outcome would have been the same, basically. I don't think it had a big effect.
So my friend Kristen, who listens to a draft of every episode and gives me feedback and notes, said, "Ah, Leah, you must take out this question where you asked him if you wanted her more because she didn't put out. That is the most antiquated bullshit." And Robert said, "No, it didn't matter. So please take it out. It makes you sound stupid." But many dating coaches and books still have this idea that it's better if a woman waits, right? Not for the very legitimate reason that it creates a false sense of intimacy. I think it does. But because it makes men want you more, right? That's still a trope. And I think many women, like myself, wonder about it and aren't totally sure if it's true or not. So I'd like to hear what you think. Men and women both, please email or call and give us your honest opinion. I guess you're most likely to wonder if it's true when you've been in a situation where you didn't wait all that long to have sex and it didn't work out. And I was in that exact spot when I went to interview Robert. So I decided to get his advice.
I do have a particular issue now. This might be a little bit weird. I'm probably not going to use it in the story, but maybe I could get your advice. Your game?
Yeah.
So a few months ago, I started dating someone that I met online. And he, similarly to you, this is why I had the thought just now, had been divorced for, or, you know, split up for about a year.
Yeah.
Or about maybe about a year now, maybe a little less than a year then. And had only like a few weeks or months before I even signed up for online dating. But so we started dating, and it was like so drama-free from the first moment. I have not once been like, "Oh, I don't know if he likes me." Like, he would always give me these big compliments, and I never felt like, "Oh, he's not interested in seeing me," or "I'm not a priority," or,
right,
you know? And at one point he said, "Well, you know, I think things can only be casual for so long, and I'm not saying that's a conversation we need to have right now, but I think that's a conversation we need to have, you know, in the near future," something like that. So I kind of took that to mean, okay, he'd like me to think about not dating other people.
Yeah.
Like, that's how I interpreted that.
Mm-hmm.
So I started thinking, okay, like, I guess that's the direction we're going in. And am I ready for that? Is he ready for that? But anyway, you know, another month or so goes by, or several weeks. And then the week before last, I said, you know, I'm doing this story about online dating. I still have my online dating profile up because I'm kind of contacting people that I've met through online dating to talk to them about their experience. But like, I want you to know I'm not actively dating other people. And to make a long story short, he was like, "Oh, well, I am." And I was like, "Oh,
that's weird."
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
He didn't even quite say that. He was like, "That's nice to hear." And the next morning I was like, "You know, if you're dating other people, I think you should tell me that." And he was like, "Oh yeah, I have been." Anyway, I was leaving town an hour later to fly to the East Coast. So we didn't really get to have a conversation about it. And we sort of left it there. And then he emailed me to say that his father was dying and he had to fly home. So now we've had basically no contact since. Okay, I'm going to interrupt my own story here to say that this is not quite how it went down. He didn't actually say my father's dying. If he had, that week would have been very different for me. The first thing that happened was that I emailed him because we were supposed to go away together the next weekend. So I wrote and said, "Look, I don't know how I feel about all this and whether I want to go away with you or even date you so long as you're seeing other people. Can I think about that for a couple of days?" And that's when he wrote and said that his father, who had Alzheimer's, had taken a turn for the worse, so he might have to fly home or be on call, and so our trip might be off anyway. And then I didn't hear anything else. It sounded pretty serious with his dad, so I knew there was a chance he'd flown home. But then I saw him online on the dating site, like twice a day, which is the terrible thing about online dating. You can see when the other person logs on and is actively online. So of course, I'm imagining that he's in LA going on all these dates. And then a week later, after the weekend when we were supposed to go away together and I'd still heard nothing, I emailed him and said, "How are you and how's your dad?" And I got an auto response saying that he was out of the office because of a death in the family. So that's how I knew his father had died. And I felt so much empathy and so much less weird about the fact that he hadn't been in touch. So I replied to the auto response and said, "Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry." You know, and some other nice things you might say to someone who's just lost a parent. And then the days went by and I still heard nothing. So by the time I went to talk to Robert, it had been about 10 days since I'd heard from the dude. Robert was pretty clear in his assessment.
My mom died when I was 23, and pancreatic cancer was sort of brutal in many ways. I could still call people, text them or email them. And so you would think he would have. But the whole way that unfolded is weird, because the way he said it to you about being casual or not being casual, I would have thought the exact same thing you did. So that when he goes, "Oh, I'm dating other people," that would be weird to me too. I think I would have had your exact same reaction. Your confusion is justified.
Okay, thank you. This is good to hear from the perspective of someone from the other gender. But we didn't quite have the conversation, right? He said, "I think, you know, maybe that's not a conversation we need to have right now, but I think that's a conversation we need to have soon." And I wasn't quite expecting it. And so I didn't say, "Well, let's talk about it. Where are we?" You know, I sort of was like, "Oh, okay." But like, there could have been another half to that sentence, which was, "And I want you to know that, like, when we get to that point, I'm not sure I'm ready for anything more than casual." I do think he then should have said,
he didn't say either way, right?
The weird thing for me was that I've never experienced anything where I felt so completely not worried. Like, I actually brought it up to kind of reassure him. Like, I've never felt so like I'd misunderstood in such a profound way. Like, usually if someone is like not that into you or not that committed, like, you can kind of feel like they don't call that often or they've got one foot out the door. The way he was, like, I had zero worry that like we were getting along great and that he was really into me. And so it was like out of left field in that way. And I think it's a good note to like, don't make assumptions, like have the conversations in full. Don't let these half sentences and half spoken, you know, whatever. Yeah.
But having conversations, especially with somebody that you're dating early on, can be sort of weird, you know. And then he says, "I'm thinking about casualness and all that." Of course, that's what you would think. And why do you have to have a big conversation then? Especially when he clearly said, "But we don't have to have the conversation now," which would make it weird for you to force the conversation then. So that's just a weird, awkward sort of situation. But that's the nice thing about online dating, or especially online dating in LA. There are so many people to date that if somebody is at all giving you mixed signals or anything, why invest a lot of time in them? Move on to the next sort of person, right? You don't have to accept somebody's sort of bad behavior. If somebody's confusing you or not making you feel comfortable, there's thousands of people here to date. So, you know, go find somebody who's actually nice and a better communicator.
I don't quite share Robert's optimism that there's so many other starfish in the sea, because as we've already established, it's hard to find a good, available man. But I did appreciate his no-nonsense assessment of my situation with the dude. You know, I was confused because ever since that book, "He's Just Not That Into You," I think all women are afraid of making lame excuses for some guy who's just not that into you. But when that fear comes up against a really fucking good excuse, like the death of a parent, you go back and forth from thinking, "But his father died. Of course he can't think about me or dating stuff. Jesus Christ, am I that self-absorbed? Give him some time," to thinking, "Yeah, but I can feel it in my bones. He's just not that into me. At least not anymore. Or not enough." Well, I heard from the guy the day after I went to see Robert. He wrote and told me about the strange and sad ordeal of burying his father. And then he said, "I did also want to tell you that I really enjoy your company and would love to see you again. So maybe we can talk about that. The next few days are slammed with work and parenting." His son had been away for 3 weeks and was coming back that night, so that was totally legit. But I noticed the convoluted and hesitant wording. "I did also want to tell you." Why not "I do want to tell you," or "I want to tell you"? I wrote back and said, "That sounds good. Let's meet up when the dust settles and have a great father-son reunion. And he wrote back, thanks. Not have a nice weekend or just thanks. And that was 2 weeks ago, and I haven't heard from him since. But I've continued to see him on the dating site more than once a day. And if he has time to do that but doesn't check in with me, I know. I'm still trying to understand what happened. I keep thinking, but he said, you're so beautiful and so sexy. You tell me all the time you're so smart, so nice, so sane. And we planned that trip together, and he said things like, maybe one day you can teach me this or teach me that. And he invited me to events with friends of his, the kinds of things I would never do if I wanted to keep it casual. And he seemed like the nicest guy, which was maybe the very thing that I liked about him the most. He seemed safe and sweet. He wasn't all that handsome or tall or rich or any of the things that would make him a woman magnet. He was not a sharp dresser, and his house was a disaster. But we had good chemistry, and I liked him. And I really liked that he seemed so into me. Well, so much for that. Or maybe it just wasn't his window. You heard Robert say that his available window was just a few weeks, but in fact it was even shorter. He'd online dated for 3 months when he wasn't ready to get serious. Then he took a month off, and then he signed up again, thinking, okay, I'm kind of ready to meet someone now. And just a few days after that, he met his current girlfriend. I met him when they'd already been going out for a few weeks, and he was technically still available, but actually already spoken for. But it was nice to talk to Robert. What a great guy. You can see why I liked him, right? And I learned that, yeah, sometimes it is timing. I've stopped looking to see if the dude is online, and I've managed not to contact him, which I'm quite proud of. My tendency is to want to talk and understand and get answers or tell the person off, just to eliminate the tension of the uncertainty and the torture of the waiting game. My other tendency is to speculate. Maybe this is what happened, or maybe that. Is he thinking X? Is he thinking Y? But this tendency to talk, whether we're talking to the guy or to our friends or just to ourselves in our heads, it's all a strategy to avoid feeling the feelings. We escape into these dialogues, but he said this and I said that and now I think this, but maybe he thinks that. To avoid feeling the deeper feelings of disappointment, rejection, hurt pride, and heartbreak, and to even know what's what in all those feelings. He was the first person I'd opened my heart to, even just a little bit, since my son's father. And it's been painful and confusing, but I've tried to stop the conversations in my head. Does it really f***ing matter? We are where we are, whatever his reasons. Okay, it hurts. Allow the hurt, and it'll pass. Allow the hurt, and suddenly you'll find yourself at the pool with your kid, watching him learn to swim, watching the instructor let him go for a moment, and seeing him take 2, and then 4, and then 6 strokes on his own without sinking. And you feel joy that this is your life, that you get to be his mom. You remember that before you met this guy, you'd finally come to a place where life felt really good, where you'd let go of this idea that you had to meet someone now, and actually felt that your life was pretty awesome, not just as a cover-up like before, but in a more genuine way, finally. And you think, maybe there's a way back there before too long, even if the first guy you kind of opened up to disappeared. Then 2 days go by, and you think, he still hasn't f***ing been in touch? Even just to wrap things up? He doesn't even feel like he owes me that? Hey, that's no way to say goodbye.
That was Leah Tau and her excellent podcast, Strangers. Leah Tau has just started a new season of Strangers, so you need to go subscribe to it immediately. Leah has done a series of these love explorations. She calls them Love Hurts over the last 3 years. So go subscribe and then listen to all of them. And you should know that Hans and I are working on our own season 2, not of Strangers, no, but of this show, of Terrible, Thanks for Asking. And we are working as we speak. Listening to this episode, I had a thought. If you have a relationship issue you would like to talk about, like, for example, if you want to call your ex and hash it out with him, her, me, them, Hans, all of us, email us ttfa@americanpublicmedia.org. If you haven't already, please join our ever-growing list of members. Any gift counts, duh, that's not just something people say. It's public radio, so we send you a present for sending us money, which doesn't exactly make it a present, but it makes sense if you don't think too deeply about it, so don't think. Just go to ttfa.org/donate. And if you're a company or just a wealthy benefactor, you can sponsor this show. Totally doable. You write us an email, an electronic mail, at ttfa@americanpublicmedia.org. TTFA is produced by Hans Buto at American Public Media. Our theme music is by Joffrey Wilson. And just thank you for listening to this, and to anybody who has ever listened to this and then told a friend about it, or just in any person. I cannot tell you how much it means to me that people who are not related to me listen to this show, because people who are related to me don't listen to it. That's cool of you, not my family. You are all not cool, and I know you won't hear that because you don't listen. But the rest of you, you're my new family, so thank you.